Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1997. Closer to the Broom.
Hello. I've said some hard things about Bill Clinton on past programs. At one time or another, I've called him a despicable criminal, a scumbag, a traitor to his country and his people, a barefaced liar, a man utterly without morals or principles, a piece of filth, and a disgrace to America. All of that is perfectly true, of course, but it seems a little one-sided. Today I want to point out to you something good about the man, something useful that Bill Clinton has done for America, even if he has done it inadvertently. And that is the corrupting effect he has had on the rest of the establishment in this country. Actually, corrupting probably isn't the right word. The American establishment, the media bosses, the politicians, the top money men, the current entertainment and cultural icons, were terminally corrupt before Mr. Clinton became president. Tarring is probably a better word. Bill Clinton has effectively tarred the establishment. He has made their corruption manifest. Even before Clinton, of course, Americans had become cynical about their government. The words politician and crook had become more or less synonymous. But there was still the expectation that crookedness would be punished. There was still the belief that there were enough honest people left in the establishment that crookedness would not be tolerated after it had been discovered, after it had been exposed. There was still a certain amount of faith in the system itself, despite the badly flawed people one could all too often see in positions of power in the system. But, my friends, that expectation, that belief, that faith was misplaced. Bill Clinton's great contribution to our people, the legacy for which he will be remembered, is his destruction of that misplaced faith, his opening of the eyes of Americans to the true nature of their ruling establishment. Crookedness takes many forms. There are thieves whose crookedness is confined primarily to stealing money and taking bribes. There are liars who seek political advantage by misrepresenting themselves or their beliefs or their intentions or their past deeds. There are the hedonists whose carnal appetite for drugs or sex or some other indulgence has excessive influence on their behavior and must be concealed from public view. In fact, regardless of the form it takes, crookedness must be concealed in order to thrive. Lyndon Johnson was the greatest crook we ever had in the White House until Bill Clinton came along. But Johnson, a consummate thief and liar, was at least moderately careful to keep his crookedness concealed. With the help of allies and the Jewish media, he was at least moderately successful in this regard. And the way in which the establishment massively punished his successor, Richard Nixon, for relatively minor crookedness tended to shore up the establishment's image of rectitude. But Bill Clinton is not only a man whose crookedness is many-faceted, he also is a man who does not know the meaning of moderation. He is not only a thief and a liar, but also a hedonist, a lecher. And he is a child of the 1960s who grew up without discipline or restraint, expecting instant gratification. He believes that he is entitled to whatever he can grab. The crowd he runs with shares his values. He is surrounded by people who do not disapprove of his tendencies or his behavior, and this makes him careless. He finds it very difficult to exercise the patience and occasional self-denial required to conceal his innate crookedness from the public. I mean, when he was the top politician in Arkansas, instead of just having a couple of mistresses on the side and visiting them discreetly, he would drop his trousers in front of any female state employee who took his fancy, and he would send out the state police to continually scout up new women for him. The establishment could save itself by disavowing Bill Clinton and throwing him to the wolves. The media bosses could keep a substantial portion of the public convinced that they are the guardians of public rectitude that they pretend to be by falling on Bill Clinton now and devouring him the way they devoured Richard Nixon a generation ago. But they are not doing it. The members of the establishment are continuing to associate themselves with Clinton. They remain his allies. Perhaps they believe that the public doesn't notice. Perhaps they believe that the public doesn't care. But really, that's only part of it. Mr. Clinton has associated himself more thoroughly and inextricably with the Jews than any other U.S. president in history, even Lyndon Johnson. He has appointed so many Jews to high positions in his administration that his fortune is to a certain degree bound to theirs. No other president has ever had a Jewish Secretary of the Treasury, a Jewish Secretary of State, a Jewish Secretary of Defense, and a Jewish National Security Advisor all at once. Not to mention hundreds of other high-ranking Jews in every branch of the Clinton government. I made a prediction last year after Mr. Clinton named his new all-Jewish national security and foreign policy team that the Jews would get America involved in another major war before the year 2000. I made this prediction not just because Clinton's appointees were all Jews, but because the Jews need another war in the Middle East in order to decisively crush their enemies there and assure Israel's hegemony. Clinton's second administration is a window of opportunity for them. Now, the fact that the media bosses are continuing to support Clinton even as the scandals around him grow strengthens my confidence in this prediction. If they were not planning something really important for which they need Bill Clinton in office, it would behoove the Jews to separate themselves from this tar baby now. But they aren't doing that. They are clinging to him as tightly as he clings to them, and more tar is rubbing off on them. And it's not just the Jewish media bosses who are being tarred by their continued support of Clinton. The other members of the establishment, politicians, multinational corporate bosses, top bureaucrats, are always eager to get away with everything they think they can. They watch the media support of Clinton, and they see a green light for every sort of crookedness. I mean, just look at the record. Before Clinton became president in 1992, back when he was governor of Arkansas, he was involved in criminal activity up to his ears. Most of his Arkansas campaign money came from organized crime bosses and big drug dealers. The people all around Clinton in Little Rock were in the drug trade. Clinton's own brother, Roger, was selling cocaine right out of the governor's mansion until he was arrested, tried, convicted, and sent to prison for it. Have you ever seen a peep about that in the controlled media since Clinton came to Washington? believe me, the big boys have heard about it. And they have noticed the way the media bosses carefully avoid any mention of it. Nearly everyone by now has heard about the Paula Jones case. But the media coverage has been astoundingly modest in view of the enormous potential for sensationalism that the case has. It was just a case the media bosses hoped would go away. And when it didn't, they were forced to report it, but only in a minimal way. The main thing the media have failed to do with the Paula Jones case is point it out as an example of a consistent pattern of behavior on Clinton's part. When Clinton was in Arkansas, he used the Arkansas State Police as his personal bimbo squad, sending them out to round up girls for him on a regular basis. The media have made it seem that the Paula Jones affair is an aberration rather than a typical example. The big boys notice things like this too, and they draw conclusions from it about what they can get away with. And so do all of the lower-ranking people in the establishment. Their attitude is, if they can get away with it, then so can I. And as the expectations of rectitude fall, as the standards fall, the actual behavior also falls throughout the establishment. People who get caught taking bribes remain in office, so long as their behavior wasn't especially outrageous. Lying is no longer considered anything really reprehensible, although one may sometimes be fined for it, as the Speaker of the House was recently. Smoking a little dope is nothing to get excited about, so long as one doesn't do it too openly. Having a mistress is no problem, as long as she doesn't go to the tabloids with lurid stories about your behavior. Homosexuality is even less a problem in Bill Clinton's Washington. Really, the only sin today is political incorrectness. And let me repeat what I've already indicated. This is not a fundamentally new situation. The establishment has been crooked for a long time. It's just that the level of crookedness has taken a sharp rise since Mr. Clinton came to Washington, and the crookedness has become a lot more noticeable. So, now, why is this situation good? Why do I say that bringing about this situation is the one good thing Bill Clinton has done with his otherwise despicable life? Is there any indication that the great mass of voters, the couch potatoes and the basketball fans, will rise up in righteous indignation against the immorality of their leaders? No, of course not. As long as their refrigerators are full and there's something amusing on the screen, they'll tolerate anything. But even the couch potatoes notice what's going on. Even they notice that the official level of tolerance for crookedness is way up. And although they may not feel any sense of outrage or indignation about this, at least they understand that they no longer must respect the establishment. They understand that there is nothing good or noble or worthy of protection in the establishment. Any sense of loyalty to it that they may have felt in the past has gone. And you know, there are people in America who are neither members of the establishment nor couch potatoes. Real people who care about more than what's in the refrigerator and what's on TV. People who still are capable of feeling a sense of outrage. When the time comes to deal decisively with America's internal enemies, it is from the ranks of these real people that the volunteer freedom fighters will come. But these real people are accustomed to following the rules and obeying the laws. They are moral people, people with a sense of propriety and order. They are not easily roused to rebellion. It is not easy for them to raise their hands against legally constituted authority. It is against their nature to destroy a government. They are builders by nature, not wreckers. As long as there seems to be any hope for reform, they will choose reform rather than revolution. As long as there seems any chance to salvage things, that's what they will try. As long as it looks like anybody in the government is still playing by the established rules, they also will play by the rules. And sometimes, because they hope so strongly for the establishment to reform itself, they may let themselves be deceived. They may indulge themselves in wishful thinking about the prospects for reform. The people in the government used to understand all of this. That's why they used to make such an effort to keep up pretenses. But Bill Clinton has really made it hard to keep up any sort of pretense. And this has made it harder for the real people, the people who care, to engage in wishful thinking. It has forced more of them to face reality, at least to come closer to facing reality than would have been the case without Bill Clinton and his media boosters setting the tone for the rest of the establishment. We know, you and I know, that one day we must completely disestablish the present establishment. We know that we must take the control of the media away from the present media bosses, that we must clean out Washington, that we must eliminate the criminals and traitors in every branch, in every department of the government, that we must break the power of the corporate bosses who have used their money to corrupt, that we must dethrone the current cultural icons and Hollywood's entertainment icons and the sports icons whose reign has so debased American life. We know that we must sweep the present establishment away with a broom of fire. We know that we must do this if America is to survive, if our race is to survive. But we also know that we cannot do it without the active participation of many others, many of the real people I have mentioned, and the moral support of many more. We certainly cannot do it against the opposition of most of the real people. We cannot do it as long as they continue to support the establishment. Their support for the establishment has been declining for a long time, but so far only a minority of them have completely withdrawn their support. The danger we face is that this process of declining support for the government, for the establishment, will take too long, that the worsening demographic situation will reach the point of no return before a sufficient portion of the real people have withdrawn their support. Bill Clinton's real value lies in his ability to speed up this process enormously. He's accomplished a great deal in this direction already, and he's got another 3 years to go. I am an optimist by nature, and I think he'll do the job for us. I think that he cannot really help himself. I think that having gotten away with so much already, he will just continue being himself. And I think that the rest of the establishment will continue following his lead. I think that the Jewish media bosses will continue supporting him and covering for him as much as they can, because they need him. They're planning something which requires a complete moral cripple in the White House. And the other members of the establishment will continue grabbing for everything they can get while the grabbing is good. Of course, most of them already understand everything I've said. They'll try to keep the situation under control with more repressive laws, with more telephone taps and Waco-style raids, with gun grabbing and restrictions on free speech. They'll try, but they would try even if they had someone less obviously crooked than Bill Clinton in the White House. That's the 20th century trend, declining support for the government, and at the same time, more government intrusion and repression, accompanied by increasing media shrillness. The trend won't be reversed until it has run its course, but it can be slowed down or speeded up. It's to our advantage for it to be speeded up, because the Mexicans are continuing to pour across the Rio Grande, and our trendy, empty-headed, TV-influenced young women are continuing to show how fashionable they are by finding black boyfriends at a skyrocketing rate, up about 300% in recent decades. Either way, we're in a hell of a mess. We shouldn't have let things go so far. But it's that fatal tendency toward wishful thinking, combined with our reluctance to upset the apple cart, which has kept us from reaching for the broom. It helped a little when Mr. Clinton began renting out beds in the White House to Chinese gangsters for $50,000 a night. It helped when Paula Jones told her story. It helped when Mr. Clinton's jackbooted goons burned all of those little children to death in David Koresh's church in Waco. But most of all, it helped when the Jewish media and the rest of the establishment responded to all of these things with a big ho-hum. No outrage. No demands that Clinton resign. Everyone understood that we are in a new era now, where such things are no longer cause for outrage, where they are simply normal behavior. We are in the Clinton era now, and because of that, we are much closer to reaching for that fiery broom that is so badly needed. Thanks, Mr. Clinton. And to all of you, thanks for being with me again today.